So you've got a business, but what about a brand? The difference? More of you. Wix gives you the freedom to create your website, own your brand, and do it on your own, exactly how you envisioned it. Experience limitless customization. Boost your creativity and efficiency with AI tools for every part of your business journey. Scale up with built-in SEO, e-com, and scheduling features. Put more of you in your business. Go to Wix.com and do it all yourself.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Doing something a little bit different today in light of the announcement that Michelin is coming to Texas. I have assembled a panel of three chefs and one person who I think has eaten probably at more Michelin-starred restaurants than anyone I know to talk about this development and kind of what it means and whether it's going to change anything, and frankly, whether anyone should care about it. So, gentlemen, let me introduce all of you separately so that people can hear your voices. He is the chef of Georgie in Dallas, RJ Yoakum. Welcome to the show.
What's up, guys?
He is the chef owner of Totemo, the winner of the 2024 Restaurant of the Year and the Culture Map Tastemaker Awards. Emmanuel Chavez, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm a huge fan of the show. Greetings from the airport.
Yeah, Emmanuel is coming to us live from New York, so appreciate the extra effort. He is the chef owner of Riel Restaurant and the man who holds the F-bomb record for What's Eric Eating. Ryan LaShane, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Eric. I'm going to try to break it again today.
I know you will. And then finally, a friend of mine for more than 20 years, he has traveled the world in search of really great restaurant experiences. Misha Goffstein, I'm delighted you're here.
I'm happy to be here too. Episode 478. I feel like I finally made it.
I think this is like 392. I don't have it right in front of me.
Close enough. It's
something like that.
You're looking handsome, Misha.
Thank you. I'm wearing my fish shirt.
Looks good on you. You're wearing it well.
All right. RJ, let me start with you, since you're our emissary from the North. You have a resume that includes stints at some Michelin-starred restaurants. I know you worked at the French Laundry for a while. You worked at Cezanne in San Francisco. You worked at Angler, also in San Francisco. From your perspective, I mean, what does this development mean for Texas restaurants that we're going to have the Michelin guide here?
I don't think this is year one, or even in the next few months, whatever it is. I think they've already been here, but bringing more professionals and a better culture, but just you can live a better life in Texas than you can in New York or San Francisco or Chicago or London. Like, I moved here, never been to Texas, never been to Dallas, never even stepped in foot into Georgie. And like, I don't know. I've brought in four people from California in the last month because I got rid of half my kitchen. Cause it's just like professionals showing up on time, having all, like, to me, it's not just a paycheck. We don't do this just to make a lot of money. But I really think it's just bringing better people here, because I don't think we need more restaurants, at least not in Dallas by any means. We don't need any more average, below average chain or like nightclub type restaurants. I think we just need better people running them or better restaurants to begin with. But that's my hope for it. I don't know. I also think the culture is so much, I think it's different in Houston and Austin than it is in Dallas.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. But Emmanuel, let me bring you in on this. I mean, you've had the little tire guy, the little Michelin mascot, sitting in your dining room for a little bit now. I mean, has earning a Michelin star been a goal of yours for Totemo?
Quite frankly, it's not the actual winning, but keeping the standards of discipline, not the actual overall experience, because that's very subjective and it's very short term. But the actual standards, like Chef said, coming in on time, having your knives ready, clean Sharpie, understanding how to label things properly, store them properly, greeting each other, ensuring the family meal, it's nutritious, delicious, those are the, to me, that's like the back end of what a Michelin kitchen looks like, not just the actual dining experience as a consumer. So those standards for us at the Temo have always been part of our culture or something that we try to implement as much as possible. Obviously, when we post on social media, things like that, and other chefs comment like, why do you try so hard, or why do you want to push towards things like that when Michelin doesn't come to the state? Those conversations or those silly shots are gone, because now we can actually try to achieve the actual one-star experience.
They should try harder.
We should all try harder.
I mean, Ryan, you run, you know, what I labeled the best restaurant in Houston in 2019. I mean, what do you make of all this? Does Houston need Michelin?
I don't know. You know, I don't know what to make of it, to tell the truth. It's interesting. I was surprised when I heard it, to be honest. You know, and I can only speak for what I do and what we do at Real here. You know, obviously would that be good for myself and my resume and whatever? Yeah, it would be awesome to you know, be in a conversation with some of these guys. But I'm honestly interested to see how it's going to work out and how it even works. Tell you the truth.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Misha, you got quoted in Allison Cook's weekly newsletter as someone who's in favor of this. So what about Michelin coming to Texas has you so intrigued?
You know, I think it's the next level. It's a huge deal, I think, because it raises the level beyond which we're operating at right now. And stagnation is not good, right? There's a long, like, awards are superficial and they don't matter. And Michelin, it's not very consistent. But I don't care about any of that. At the end of the day, it's the most prestigious award there is right now. And we went in Texas, right, for, frankly, pretty stupid reasons, through, I think, a 30-year drought of no James Beard Award winners. And I don't care what anybody says. It has a suppressive effect on chefs and the way they cook, the best chefs coming here or choosing to leave here. It's got to have an effect on investors willing to fund the best kitchens that are doing a great job versus a phenomenal job versus a terrible job. Standards matter. So I think, you know, Michelin, even being imperfect coming in here, huge deal.
Well, yeah, I mean, I should say you're a kind of serial entrepreneur in the tech world. I mean, who's invested in some restaurants in the past. I mean, does the prestige of knowing that you could be part of the team behind a Michelin star, like, make you more likely to write a check to somebody?
Not for me, because first of all, I'm not a big restaurant investor. There are some brilliant chefs out there that I just think somewhere between deserve the support and really can't fail because they're so good. I'd write a check to any of them. If I had infinite amount of money, I'd write checks, bigger and bigger checks, right? I don't think Michelin inspectors are all that great. So, like, I don't think a Michelin star necessarily makes a big difference in that regard. But for any investor out there, you guys are out there raising money for your restaurants. If you get a Michelin star, it gets easier to raise money. It's simple as that, right? You know, who invests in restaurants? It's lawyers and dentists and executives. It's people with a little bit of money to splash around. How do they know what restaurant to invest into? The ones with Michelin stars get more money. Simple as that. They'll get more bookings. They'll get longer reservation waiting times, right? It's all going to accrue to more money, right?
I don't think so. You know, those places, they run, you know, their margins are thin. My margins are thin, like, yeah. The staff and the product they're using and, you know, this demand power is fucking crazy, you know? Like, so that's, I don't know, maybe you're assuming we make money doing this.
No, I do not.
But yeah, you know, the ones that I've been in, like, it's ridiculous, like, how tight it is and how many hands, sets of hands are. Like, I run my place with me and three cooks.
But it's undeniable, with a Michelin star, you can charge more money. You charge more money with two, and you'll charge even more money with three. So, look, margins are relative, right? And I know the grind. I know, like, I know that there's a certain level where I walk into a restaurant, and especially because, like, I don't drink, I know they're losing money on me in particular, you know? So I know I'm getting something for free when I walk in there. But at the end of the day, you command a higher ticket price when you get a Michelin star.
people drinking up for both of us, Misha.
Yeah, that's very generous.
Why would you hang out one?
Yeah, I got you, buddy.
RJ, let me bring it back to you. I mean, you know, you mentioned you've been in kind of the process of turning over some of the staff at Georgia as you kind of seek to raise what you're doing there. But talk about kind of what lessons you're bringing from these places you've worked and how that sort of relates to potentially earning a Michelin star at Georgia. Because I've seen you on the list for,
I think,
you know, all the Dallas people, you're on the short list.
Whatever, throw that in the garbage. I think it's just being fearless. Like, don't go in like wanting to get better every fucking day. Everything you do, you attack, you want to get better. What? How can I do this better? How can I do this tighter? How can we, are we evaluating ourselves every day in our cuisine? Like every week I come in on Monday, I just came back and like, let's look at the menu. What are we changing? How do we want to change this? What do we want to do on the tasting? Are we giving enough? Are we giving too much? Are we doing the best possible? Are we being content at where we're at? Because whoever in whatever thing is talking, like, it doesn't matter about that. Cause like both chefs said, it's like, it's all temporary. It's the best part. Cause I'm like a huge basketball guy before I got into cooking. Kobe Bryant would always talk about, everybody wants to see the end goal, see the big trophy, but they don't realize the hard shit in the middle is like, the process is the best part. Maybe you fucked up a duck. Maybe you did something wrong, but like the next day, you're never going to forget that. Never. Like, I will never forget dropping Grant Ackett's freaking turbo liver on the fucking ground when we did a whole service, killed a live turbo for him. And I dropped it and it was my day off and I went on my day off to cook for him. And I've never gotten screamed at more in my life, but like, I know I'll never accidentally throw that away or do the stupid shit, but you just got to get through it. Like, you overcooked the fish. Fuck, I overcooked the fish. Yes, chef. What the fuck? Don't do it again. You're going to keep doing it. But I don't know. That's what I get out of all this, is because like, I got thrown into my job. And like a year later, if you would have told me what I'm doing in Dallas, which it's a small market, but going to be a big one very soon. But it's just the constant. There's half the people there thought I was only going to last a month. And I just said, fuck you. Still doing it. Like, I'm trying to fake it till I make it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say, as someone who's eaten at your restaurant a couple of months ago, I mean, I thought it was one of the most delicious meals I've had this year at any restaurant anywhere. But talk about kind of like, what are the changes that you're making as you're kind of in pursuit of this goal?
Just tightening things, like still trying to run a really good food cost and good labor. Like, some, I would rather you work 10 to 11 hours, 4 days a week, then work 5 days a week and work six. Like, how do I cut the right people? I just started doing this where I change where people are at on the schedule every week. So one time they're at the top, they had a weird week. It's not like mind fucking with them, but it's like, how are you guys getting better? Like, are you guys pushing each other to be better? Or like, you guys just like coming in every day just to like shoot the shit. And I hate it. Like, but I'm still there like 6 days a week. And like, it's not, I'm the chef, but it's not in my restaurant.
Emmanuel, let me bring you back in. I mean, you know, you know, I think you're on my personal short list of a restaurant that could earn a star. I think RJ is right. I think the inspectors have already been in the field. I think they already have a pretty good sense of who's going to get stars and who's not going to get stars in Texas. But do you suspect that you've spotted anybody, or have you changed anything as you kind of get ready for this new phase of restaurant life in Texas?
We did change a few things, but it was prior to the actual announcement. We wanted to operate at a more refined and mature way. So because our crew is very young, we try to picture to them in two categories. Either treat this as your college or career or your college style, where you have freshmen, seniors, and so on. And every time that you come in or every month that passes by, you need to get better. You're not always good. When we bring new people, the freshmen become the sophomores and so on. So in that way, everybody gets better at something, like Chef said, each month passes by. Because at some point those members walk away And then when I do bring new people, I want to ensure that the gap is not too massive. We've also started to feature more seafood. We play with the idea. At first, we were very vegetable forward, but now we want to kind of just give people what they want. At the end of the day, our music was way too loud. We turned it down. We're trying to extend our beverage program, which is still non-alcoholic. I guess you can say that we're starting to listen to what people have asked us to do for the longest time.
Misha, I mean, I'm sure you've been sort of having the same like text exchanges with other people that I have. Do you have any expectations for how many restaurants in Houston might get 1, 2, or 3 stars?
It's complicated because Michelin is so inconsistent based on a region, right? I mean, and by the way, that would difficult job, right? When they go to Japan, I think there's 500 stars awarded in Japan. It is the most insane dining environment anywhere in the world. The concentration of great restaurants is different than in other places. Just the sheer size of what they're going to go do in Texas seems daunting. So, I mean, recently Atlanta came out with a guide, total of 5 stars, right? Denver came out with a set of stars, I think 5 or 6 stars, right? Miami, I think, has over a dozen. That surprised me. I don't think Miami is a great dining city. So I think the number is kind of hard to peg. I would guess it lands somewhere above 12, right? DC is 18, and DC has generally had just more fine dining restaurants. And I think we got to be honest, Michelin is a fine dining guide, right? They can say whatever they want. There'll be some weird things they're going to do. They do something weird for PR purposes every single time. There's a taco shop done in Mexico City. There is a ramen shop done in Tokyo. There was some kind of a food stall, I think, in Singapore. They're going to do something strange just to generate the headlines. But I think number of restaurants, I think it's going to be about a dozen or so.
You think it'll be barbecue, Misha?
Yeah, no, that's my Michelin hot take is that at least one barbecue restaurant somewhere in the state will get a star.
Yeah.
I don't think of Houston as that city, you know.
No, I think we're going to get a couple of barbecue places that are bibs, but I think Franklin Barbecue is probably going to get a star just cuz it's the biggest most obvious name.
And this is where I don't know, like, it's nobody knows who the Michelin inspectors are, but are they going to get the Houston market, for example, and the fact that some of our Vietnamese restaurants are phenomenal? And what really should stand out are places that nobody really understands. Like, I had a friend tell me he thinks Nam Giao really stands out, but I have no idea who they're going to hire and whether going into a market as big as Texas, they can figure out that a place like Nam Giao maybe should stand out. And if you're going to give a star to some random place, that one should be on the list. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, I mean I think we're kind of a bib city, not so much a star city, because we don't have a ton of really refined fine dining. You know, I'm excited about the idea that like Himalaya could get a bib gourmand, you know, places like that. You know, could Aga's get a bib gourmand? Could Crawfish and Noodles, you know, Burger Chan, our Tex-Mex favorites, you know, could a place like Ninfa's that's historically significant get a bib gourmand? That's, you know, I think that's going to be how Houston really shines.
I do think Houston's going to get more stars than any other city in Texas.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Look, RJ's about to shoot lasers at me.
Got fired.
No, that's very true. Like, I've only been to Houston once, and like I'll even say that I'm stuck in the north.
Yeah, I mean RJ, I mean I haven't been studying Dallas very closely, but do you have a sense of you want to go out on the same limb that Misha's on and make a prediction for the number of restaurants you think are going to get a star? I mean, like the Mansion at Turtle Creek seems like a historically significant.
I think they'll get the hotel nomination, especially for what's to come there in the next 18 months, what I've heard from my mentor. But I think that's an improvement.
And the place the most deserved it in Dallas just closed, right? Like Carte Blanche, I think, would have been great. I think Carte Blanche would have gotten it, but
I think you would have.
I mean, I think Lucia is really great. Like, I think Lucia could get a star. I think what Misty Norris is doing at Petra and the Beast is pretty interesting. She's on that.
Absolutely.
She's on that short list.
Toby's really good.
Teon, right? The sushi place.
Yeah, they changed ownership though. So it's also Michelin is always when Skeens, when everybody left Saison to go open Angler and Skeens left, you get Laurent Gras, who's like one of the most decorated Michelin star chefs in the world. He went down to two. Like Michelin's very big on like when the chef leaves or like stuff like that changes. It can go, it can go either way, but that's, I don't know. I think it's, I honestly think Dallas might get a little snubbed. Like, I think we'll get mentioned, but we won't get any stars.
Oh no. I think
Dallas will get stars.
I think all of these cities that are paying to be in the guide, they're going to find at least a couple of stars, right? Like even in San Antonio, which I think is the weakest overall scene in Houston, like, you know, Mixley or something like that is probably going to, you know,
look, I'd rather eat in Dallas than Atlanta. And Atlanta, they found some place in Atlanta to award, right? So yeah, they'll be, and look, by the way, for all intents and purposes, there shouldn't be that much of a difference between Houston and Dallas. Like people don't like it when I frame it this way, but it is fine dining and it is about feeding rich people. I hate to say it that way, but it is. Both of these cities should be punching well above the weight they're at right now, right? There's more millionaires in Houston than there are anywhere in U.S. outside of New York. Dallas is not that far behind. You know, it's these people are serious eaters, I think, you know?
In front of Georgie is $980 million renovation for hotels, apartments. It's going to be like where that street is, it's going to be like the Las Vegas fucking strip, because no one goes downtown Dallas. Like it's disgusting, but there's so much people that live in Dallas. They like their shitty Monday place, their Tuesday place. They can go get a martini with their five olives, their Wednesday place where they can go wherever. And then they go off to New York, Chicago, LA. And that's where they want to have like that experience where I've had to actually get to know my clientele more. And it's actually helped me. Is
they'll go out of town and they'll splash money on
big money
everywhere. Right.
I had a table last night on a Sunday night. I cooked for them. They spent $9,000 on wine.
Wow.
They spent $800 on four tasting menu. And it's like kind of making that relationship between guest and chef. And that's hard for some. It's easier for me, but I think once they realize they can have that in Dallas or Houston or wherever, like in Texas, you won't have to go as far.
That's exactly right. And look, they'll still travel and spend money.
Yeah.
They'll spend money locally as well. I was in Tokyo a couple of months ago. We walked into, you know, it's classic Tokyo omakase place, one of the best sushi houses in Tokyo. We kind of got sat at the gaijin counter. So by definition, they're all Westerners, but we sat down at a six-person counter. It was me and my friend, four of the people. Every single person was from Houston. I mean, how does that happen, right? I mean, like, trust me, people in these cities, right, especially Houston and Dallas, spend a lot of money on food, I guarantee you. And for that reason, I think when the Michelin stars start to get awarded, it raises the bar. Restaurants will make more money and more restaurants will get funded.
I mean, Ryan, let me ask you, I mean, does knowing that this is a possibility, like, does it make you want to change anything about what you're doing at Riel, upgrade the wine list, or,
you know, I'm 8 years old already, right? Like for me to try to change gears. And now are we obviously, you know, we're always pushing there, always trying to be better, you know, every day, but, you know, changing things around just to chase a star, like right now, I don't know if that would be the smartest thing for me to do at that place. Right. Like, we've been around, you know, we do what we do there, and, you know, you kind of know what you're getting into when you come in, and that's that, right?
You know, I mean, does it make you want to open a new restaurant that would be maybe better suited to earn a star or two?
I don't know. You know, that's a tough question. Do I, you know, like, do I want to cook like that? I don't know. Like, I like what we do at Real. I stand behind what we do. Is it for everybody? No. But, you know, like I said, we've been around 8 years and I'm proud of what we do there. So I'm not going to change how I cook or what I do for something like that. I'm like, you know, like I said at the beginning, would I like a star in that? Would it make me feel good? I'd love it for my staff in that. But, you know, we all, you know, I don't run around chasing stars. Fuck, I can't even win a fucking tastemaker award.
Poor Emmanuel.
I'm the fucking Susan Lucci. I'm the Susan Lucci of the Tastemaker Awards. Every year I get nominated, I get fuck all.
Yes, I think you should dress up like Susan Lucci.
I should.
I mean, Emmanuel, are you like of all of us sitting here? You're like I said, I think you're my pick to on my short list of places that could get one.
Hands down.
I mean, for sure. Do you think getting a star would kind of open you up to a new class of diner? Like there are people who like look you up on Google Maps and are like, no way. Like I'm not. But then if you get a star, like now they feel kind of compelled.
To be completely frank, honest with you guys, when the announcement came out, we saw maybe like 12% on reservations go up just by people mentioning us on either comments or just telling friends. So it was a really, really, we're going to capitalize on shit like that regardless because we need it. It's a small space. We don't have people just throwing us money. So we need to be very smart anytime our restaurant gets mentioned and things like that. Unfortunately, the Houston dining scene is so new to this style of cuisine or accolades. But restaurants like the Temo have existed in LA, in New York, strip, they're just hitting little gems and strip malls next to like random ass Tex-Mex spots, like in Chicago. We joke a lot about the Temo being a hybrid or the little brother of Cato in LA. When they got their one star, they were next to a Tex-Mex restaurant and a strip mall. There was very little parking. They didn't have a wine license. It was BYOV, and they got a one star. I believe their second year. California's another restaurant in San Francisco.
10-seater. That was a great dude.
Yeah, 10-seater. He was the one who sent me a message to give me like, hey, this is what you need to look out for. These are the people that kind of take care of these things. And again, the Temo, it's very in that aspect of not being the most flashy restaurant. That doesn't really bother us. We know what we do. Like Chef said, we're going on year three, which is may or may not be a lot to a lot of people, but we're extremely proud of what we do. And every year I feel like we get better, whether it's the service, the actual just camaraderie of the team, the food that we put out. If we get it, it's meant for us. And if we don't, I mean, it's not really going to affect anything at the end of the day.
I mean, when I think about how far you've come from delivering me a Tayuda in like very early pandemic in 2020.
And selling tortillas at a market.
Yeah, right. To being a Food and Wine Best New Chef and two-time James Beard finalist and on the short list of restaurants that we could think get a Michelin star. Like, I mean, it's incredible. Like you should feel nothing but proud of how hard you've worked and how far you've come.
No, and I do. And I do. And again, if it's meant for us, cool. And if it's not, it's not going to change anything.
If you don't get one, you got fucking snubbed, dude. Really. Like, that's, I'll even be pissed off if you don't get one.
We'll send them an email.
Yeah.
I will say that's comforting to know that you don't necessarily need to sell alcohol, because I wasn't clear on that myself. And it opens up you, and it opens up Neo, which is our, like, the most progressive, the most ambitious omakase counter in town. Because I'd like to see them get a star too.
See, now that's more of a private event. So the conversation shifts a little bit. As much as I love those guys, that conversation of do they operate as a restaurant or a pop up or a private
event? I think Lazy Bear is sort of like that. They got
not
star.
Anymore. They changed it over COVID, but.
You shutting it down too, right? You shutting it down for 3-4 months and redoing it.
Yeah. When I was, this is like 8 years ago, I lived in Chicago. I worked at 42 Grams, and it was me.
You worked at 42 Grams?
Yeah. It was my first job out of college. Oh, I got my ass kicked.
I love
every
that
day, man.
That documentary that's out. Abuse, I've watched it 100 times.
Abused stepchild. I was the culinary school kid. 12.
Send me a message after
11,
this.
11
Send
months.
Send me a message, please.
Oh, my God.
I'll connect everybody. I'll connect everybody after this.
No, but it was BYOB, and it was 18 guests a night, 10 by 8 or 8 by 10. But people would send their wine, and we would just have to hold it for them. And like, they would bring us beer, and we'd get just, Chef would get lit. Like, but he got 2 stars first time around, won everything. It was a short. He's in Florida,
and that's what's hard. I think getting a star for food at a strip mall restaurant, a lot of precedent for that. Yeah. Where I think Michelin starts to get more superficial is probably 2-star land. They expect more service, and
it's the experience and the story behind it, and like husband and wife, and then you have the abused stepkid in the back, and like I was a dishwasher and the prep cook, but like it was. The service that she did all the talking, we served everything. Like we would have to wash dishes between seatings. Like we didn't have it. We just had a 3-compartment sink.
That's how we do it now.
Yeah. And like all the glasses would get, we had one of the wife's little brother would like clean all the wine glasses or like whatever. And it just like, whatever. It was cool. But like, there was some bad service, got a little weird sometimes.
Not sustainable.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder about that for, you know, but one of the ones in Austin that people talk about is Birdie's, where it's that fast casual format. They don't take reservations and you have to line up to get before you order and you're seated. And a lot of the seating's outdoors. And there's just something, there's just something hilarious to me about the idea of a couple of Michelin inspectors sweating their asses off in, 90-degree Texas weather, waiting for their turn to order the beef tartare and the pasta of the day at Birdie's.
If they get more stars in Austin than Houston, I'll be pissed.
Well, it's not even clear to me like who's gonna like we're gonna play a game with Houston restaurants here at the end where I've got a list of about 20 places that I just want you to give me a yes no on. But does Uchi get a star?
Not
there's,
for me.
There's your answer. There's your answer right there, Eric.
They're not on my, like, I respect what they do and it's been very successful, but you know, maybe the counter, like maybe,
they don't need it.
Ojea, but like, I can't see the main restaurant. Getting
see, that's, right. That's my story with Austin. I went to Ojea and it just wasn't very good. Right. Like it's not even close.
Yeah. I mean, Ojea in Houston is designed to kind of be a testing ground, right? Like it's R&D as much as it is about like telling a story in the way that a traditional omakase restaurant does. All right. Well, you want to play my game? You want to give me a yes, no on?
No, I don't.
All right. Well, Misha, will you do this?
Let me do this shit.
I have to be the butcher on this one.
Yeah.
It's why you're here.
Oh, great. Well, how come everybody else gets a pass? Let's do this.
All right. Well, cause they have, all right. I have 4 restaurants that I think in Houston are locks. BCN, Katami, Le Jardinet, and March. Do you have any disagreements with those?
I'm not going for BCN. Sorry.
Really?
It's been about a year or so, but I think it's been up and down. I know they have a new chef in the kitchen, so maybe unfair to say, but it's been wildly inconsistent as far as I'm concerned.
I don't know. I mean, Chef Fernando brings that experience from Cezanne and Angler. I mean, that guy can really cook. And RJ worked with him. RJ knows him.
He taught me how to cook meat. Love that guy.
I won during the pandemic. So it's probably it was while Basso was trying to open. So it might have been before his time, but it was not great at the time.
All right. And then I have 3 that are more likely than not. Totemo, Nancy's Hustle, and Theodore Rex.
I love Nancy's Hustle. I think it might be just below the bar in terms of just how casual the food is.
I just think it's that like kind of classic Chicago-y restaurant. And there are places in Chicago that, from my very limited understanding, seem similar to what they do that have stars. And so I feel like I'm, you know, when everything comes together.
I think
together
of like a Houston Au Cheval, and Au Cheval is great. It's just that I don't think they have a star in Chicago, right?
Yeah. All right, and then
you know how I feel about T-Rex. I think Theodore Rex should get it. So,
oh, for sure,
I agree.
Institution. I don't know what to make of the fine dining Indian restaurants: Musafir, Amrina, Kirin's, or Veranda. I feel like at least one of them is going to get a star, but I don't know how to like I don't know how to split them up.
I'm very confused by all of them because I like some of the stuff, but there's just a lot of sugar in all of their like whenever they try to go high end. For whatever reason, they started doing tasty menus and just adding sugar to every dish, and it just gets crazy. So, I mean, I wouldn't go there, but again, the randomness of Michelin might pull them up there. I doubt it. They're not on my list, you know.
Right. And then we have, you know, if Katami is the best sushi restaurant in Houston, then we have, you know, maybe the cut right below MF Sushi, Soto, Katarabata. I feel like at least one of them is going to get a star.
I agree.
I can see MF getting a star.
I think Neo's got to be a lock, right?
Well, I don't know what to, like, I think Emmanuel makes a good point about is Neo a restaurant? Because, you know, if you can't book it on like a regular reservation platform, I don't know what to quite make it.
Just put it this way. Schwa has a Michelin star and they do whatever the hell they want, right? I mean, at one point I had a reservation to Schwa. I showed up and the door was locked. They just didn't show up to work that day. So they'll be fine, you know?
And then there's kind of the new kids, right? Like, you know, could Evelyn and Henry get one for June? Could the guys at Basso get one? I feel like that's probably not, but I'd be delighted for either one of those restaurants to get one.
I wouldn't be surprised. And I would certainly, I mean, look, I think anybody who's worked for Skeens and survived deserves a star. So RJ, I haven't been to your place, but look, Skeens, is a brilliant chef and a maniac. So I think anybody's gone through that system is built different, most likely. So I wouldn't be surprised if Basso got one.
Hidden Omakase, you know, that's kind of the more traditional, the most traditional of the omakase counters.
I haven't been
since Chef Nikki left, so I really have no perspective on it.
I didn't even know she was gone, but it was there's too much going on. It's Michelin actually loves to sling a lot of stars with Japanese places, but not necessarily when they're progressive the way. And when I say progressive, I mean a lot of stockpiled on a nigiri. So they got to be more traditional, I think, and they're a little too wild.
And then they don't seem to like steakhouses very much, but if they were going to do one, it would be Pappas Brothers.
Either that or Vic and Anthony's, but honestly, I don't go to steakhouses enough to even know. There are steakhouses that get stars. It's usually in Vegas, right? So some combination of unlimited budget, casino, and steakhouse and a celebrity chef can get you a star, but generally.
Right. Wolfgang Puck has one for Cut, and Pappas Brothers has, I mean, the best wine list in Houston, the deepest inventory. So if they were going to do a steakhouse, I think it would be Pappas Brothers. And then the other one that came to mind was Bluedorn, just because, you know, Aaron's got the pedigree. He said he's told me personally that he doesn't think he'll get one. But I also feel like there's a certain amount of man plans, God laughs. And I could see, you know, you say you don't want it. Well, now you get one and you have to keep it.
Maybe, but I'm kind of blown away. You kind of went right past March. That's fascinating to me.
No, March was on my locks.
Was it? Oh, okay.
BCN, Katami, Le Jardinet, and March. I think
it's a polarizing place. I like it a lot, but there are people that don't.
Yeah, no, I hear from those people every time I go there. They pop up in my DMs and tell me that they think it sucks. But I think that that's what I do. There's a function on Instagram called Restrict that means they never see if I read their DMs and means they can't comment on my posts anymore. I'm not fast with a block, but I'm very quick with a restrict. But no, March, I mean, I don't think there's a 3-star in the entire state of Texas. That's one of my Michelin hot takes. I think we'll be very lucky to see more than 2 or 3 2-stars. But I think March has the best shot of any restaurant in Houston to get 2-stars.
I don't think we'll see 2-stars in Houston.
No, there'll be no, I don't think there'll be any 2-stars first year.
Well, if March is a 1-star, then the rest of us are fucked.
Yeah.
I think March has that right combination of not just the food, but the atmosphere, the service.
I think the service is there, but they turn their menu way too often to stay consistent for a 2-star place in Michelin world, right?
But it's like Addison in San Diego went 1, next year got 2, and then the third, Manresa did close, so there is some like things there, but like they got 3, like, and now they got 1 the first year they did the whole state. That was when Saison lost 2 or lost, went down to 2, Angler got 1. Because we didn't get a star the first month we opened at Angler. By month 3, the whole California guide came out and we got 1. But I think, yes, it's fucked if everybody gets 1. But I think that March is probably, I've been there once. the one time I went to Houston, and it was phenomenal, and the service acts with that. But I just don't. I think it's too. I think it's too early. Yeah, too soon to give out too, because I feel like I've had better 2-star meals than I've had 3-star meals.
For sure, I just like
100% better.
I think I think Smith is probably the only one that's gonna stay amazing even with 3 stars. But usually they get their 3rd star and things start to go downhill. They get scared to lose it, you know.
But at the end of the day, there's plenty of fucking good restaurants that don't have shit. Like, does it? It's like one of those things you like. If you get it, pat on the back, cool. But go back to work the next day. But it's like, you go to New York, and like, you can have a fucking great meal in any little borough, and a great dining experience, and they don't have shit. They don't care about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, being the media guy, right? I think what's going to be fun for us is the 10 best Houston restaurants that didn't get a star. You know, we'll push back in ways like that, right? Like,
you know, Eric, there's a couple of dark horses you didn't mention.
Oh, I was just about to ask you, what did I leave off?
You know, Littles, I think Littles has really high standards. RJ mentioned, look at it, this is just consistency. I think he brought in a California crew that operated in the Michelin market, and I think he does things right. I think Littles is great, you know. So they're on my list.
And I mean, Navy Blue's the other one that I kind of left off.
Don't laugh, but DeMarco is kind of back a little bit.
Yeah, I haven't been to DeMarco since the guy left to open Amore. I mean, Tony's is the obvious one, the fine dining restaurant. I have a lot of respect for Chef Kate, but I just can't see it. I think it's too dated.
I haven't been. I haven't been to Brennan's in 20 years, I can't say, you know.
No, Brennan's is not going to get us. There's no way. Like, you know, I love seeing that on Facebook. I mean, no disrespect to people. Like, I understand why people love that restaurant. It's a local institution that's done an incredible amount of good for the community. But no way does Brennan's get a star.
I don't know, man. I had a couple 25-cent martinis. They're pretty good.
yeah. Your assessment of it get like, go for lunch and have a couple of 25-cent martinis. Your assessment of it gets a lot more enthusiastic, I think. And then kind of beyond that, you know, I saw someone talking about, you know, Maison Pucha or stuff like that. Like, I just can't see that.
I don't think I've been.
You know, I'd like to see, I love Cultivare and Giacomo's and places like that. I'd love to see them get bibs, but I don't see it. I don't see them for stars.
Yeah.
I mean, Misha, you go to Cultivare more than anyone I know. What do you think?
I love Cultivare. I think it's too casual probably for what Michelin goes after. And I know the award casual restaurants, but it's almost tongue in cheek. So I don't think Cultivare is going to make it. I love it, but it doesn't mean that it's going to get a star.
All right, gentlemen, any final thoughts? We've been at this for about 45 minutes.
Dallas is screwed.
Yeah. No.
you better hope Culture Map Dallas doesn't pick this up. You're not going to be a popular man after this comes out.
I think we have a lot more to improve on, and I just want everybody to be better. That's all I want. It's how do we all get better? How do we push each other in the right direction? Just not be like petty. Just cook good food, give great service. Don't like, I don't know. I think maybe I'm just new and still figuring it out. But
you know, it's not actually about this year, right? What you're going to see is the big impact in year 5. Just think about it this way, right? How many Texas chefs cook around the world in some of the best restaurants in the world, but really feel like they can't come back to Texas and open a place, either can't find the support or don't think like they're going to meet their objectives professionally? There was a kid at Kaioten Sushi Co. in Austin, you know, worked at Uchi, which I'm not a huge fan of, but I thought he was doing really great work. He left Austin to Chicago, and I asked him why. He said, I want to get a Michelin star. So he's in Chicago now. Still doesn't have a star. But that was his goal. He left Texas for that reason alone, right? I mean, think about all the chefs that worked, for example, for Enrique Olvera, right? And in Pujol, right? They're not coming back here. They should be. But I think when it's a Michelin market, they will. So I think... The first year is kind of an opening volley. Sometimes they'll even take a restaurant, and like RJ said, even if somebody deserves 2 stars, they'll give them 1 so they can get a new cycle the next year after an upgrade. But the real impact is about 5 years later, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think about, you know, you talk about March, right? If March gets 1 star, like, I mean, knowing Felipe in June and, you know, the high standards that they have for themselves, like, I would certainly see them trying to figure out, like, whatever it is they need to do to get that 2nd star, right? And I kind of feel that same way about BCN, right? If you're right and BCN doesn't get a star, knowing Chef Luis, knowing the owner Ignacio Torres a little bit, like, they're going to be laser focused on whatever changes they need to make to get that.
I think they can. They maybe don't, you know, haven't invested enough to get it right. It's been 2 years since I've been there, but I think that's the change you're going to see, is some of the restaurants that are kind of on the bubble will raise their game because it does matter. You know?
And I think this will bring in talent, right? Like the idea that if you're, you know, if you're working in New York or Chicago and it's very competitive and hard to get a star, maybe you come down to Houston. Maybe it's a little easier to get one here.
Way fucking cheaper.
Yeah.
Way cheaper.
Dallas is cool too, though.
Yeah. I mean, I like Dallas. I like Dallas fine, but yeah.
I got 2 people from Napa and 1 person from LA. And as a patient, my corporate pastry chef, it's I'm excited, but
yeah, I guess from your perspective, this makes it easier to recruit people, right? Like knowing that they could get this.
And like, I've waited 15 months since, like, I've been in Texas for 16 months now. And by month 6, they kind of just like, all right, we're separating the celebrity chef steakhouse to let this young 29-year-old try and see what he's got. And like, it's going to be good to finally have, I've always had help, but like, more of what comes from where I come from, in a way.
All right. Brian LeShane, I'll give you the last word.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
All right.
I got to get back to fucking work now.
I understand. Misha Goffstein, thank you for being part of this. Emmanuel had to go. He had to catch a plane, but I appreciate him being here. RJ Yoakum, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for doing this.
No, I appreciate it. Anytime, Eric.
Thanks, Eric. RJ, next time we're in Houston, come by and see me.
I will definitely, Ryan. Have a great day, my friend.
You guys. Have a good one. See you, Mish.
See you soon.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guests will be Yotam Dolev and Itai Ben-Eli from Okto, Doris Metropolitan, and Hamsa.
Running a business can be exhausting. Building your website shouldn't be. With Wix, you can express your ideas, give direction, then leave the heavy lifting to AI. From site creation to branded content and images. Have fun with the details. Customize what you want the way you want. And manage your whole business from a centralized dashboard with expert AI tools. Build, scale, and enjoy the incredible results. You can do it all yourself on Wix.